96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Danya Heffley with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, September 10th. Novo Collegiate Alliance, a group of New College alumni and supporters, endorsed a plan to privatize the public college. The proposal aims to make the college a private nonprofit school over 10 years. The Alliance believes the college is in a state of, quote, unparalleled crisis. It blames the current administration for a decline in academic quality. The group cites the college's lowest ever national ranking and the low student SAT scores. The group's support is conditional. They want the plan to restore the college's original academic program. They also want to ensure alumni have a major role on the future governing board. Is another run for president on the books for Ron DeSantis? Right now, it looks like this would be challenging. The governor not only polarizes people, but he has a 10-point disapproval gap. That's according to a new national poll from YouGov and The Economist. For every 100 people surveyed, 33 approve of his performance, while 43 disapprove. The poll highlights big challenges with key demographics. Only 1 in 4 women approve of his performance. Fewer than 1 in 3 Hispanic adults polled approve of him. Support among Black voters is extremely low, with only 6% approving. And then, DeSantis has a young voter problem. His disapproval is high with those under 40, with more than twice as many disapproving as approving among voters under 30. Watch for rising water. King tides and heavy rainfall are causing an increased risk of flooding in Florida. This week, the king tides are at their highest point of the year. This is because of a full moon in its closest orbit to Earth, known as a perigean spring tide. While these tides can cause minor coastal flooding on their own, the risk is worsened by stagnant weather fronts over central and south Florida. These fronts are producing numerous intense storms with heavy downpours, leading to a flash flood risk that will last the rest of the week. Some areas could get up to 6 inches of rain. It is important for residents to be aware of the flood risk and to remember that these stagnant weather patterns can sometimes lead to the development of a tropical system. This has been Danya Heffley with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, September 10th.
Sweet as can be. I am the king, baby. Buzz with me. Govern your hive and your life. Tell me, little baby, that you buzz me all the time. Cause the way we kiss just can't miss. Don't make me wait to feel your warm embrace. Each and every time that we get the chance. Come on, little baby, let's make some romance.
Good morning. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report right here on your own community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton. My name is Bob Connors, and I want to mention that the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guest and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, the board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. And I'd also like to mention that support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or info@manateespirit.com. And Jim, are you there? Yes. Jim, are you there? Well, we have a guest on the line, and for some reason, he cannot hear me. Wait a minute. Is there a button to click there? I'm just talking to John Dickman. We disconnected our guest. That's what we did. So we will try again to pull him up. And in the meantime, we'll get back to the music so that we can give him a ring.
Hard-hearted Hannah, the vamp of Savannah, the meanest girl in town. Leather is tough, but Hannah's heart is tougher. She's a gal who likes to see men suffer. To tease them and thrill them, to torture and kill them. It's her delight, they say. I saw her at the seashore with a great big pan. There was Hannah pouring water on a drowning man. That's a hard-hearted Hannah, the vamp of Savannah, GA.
Hello, we're back to the Peace and Justice Report. Jim, can you hear me? Well, Jim can still not hear me for some reason. We don't know. Hello, Jim, can you hear me? Well, we will have to do something other than have Jim Hunt on the phone today. As I said, we're switching studios. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's a plug that is disconnected. But in the meantime, we have John Dickman and the manager working on it to see if we can make it happen. I do have two telephone guests today, so that is that could be a problem with both guests if we cannot get the phone lines working. So, okay, we'll be right back to you.
An evening spent with Hannah sitting on your knee is like being in Alaska in your BBB. That's hard-hearted Hannah, the vamp of Savannah, D.A.
One Stevie Wonder.
Because it's you I hate to lose.
games.
Oh, you too, eh?
Move on down the line. I'm gonna pack my suitcase. Move on down the line. But you see, there ain't nobody worried and there ain't nobody crying.
Back to the Peace and Justice Report. We have a phone guest. We think we have it straight now. Are you there, Jim? Oh, boy. Something is not hooking up here. We had two people working on this situation, and it still is not coming through. So with that in mind, we will go back to the music, and that's what we'll do.
Every day, I have the blues.
Every day, I have the blues.
2. Caller, are you there? Caller, are you there? Hello? Thank you.
for the third.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Peace and Justice Report. Hello, B. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Bob? It's good to be here.
Well, I'm doing good. I'm good. I'm glad you were our second guest today. We kind of lost out on our first guest, but he's fine with that. So, B, what I'd like to do is just read a brief bio. I'm going to make it brief. You have an incredibly long bio because you've done you've done so much. But let me just read a little bit of it, even though let me see. Let me pull it up. Of course, my screen just went blank.
No worries.
I want to pull this up. Well, I want you to introduce yourself just a little bit. Then I'm going to read some of your bio as soon as I pull it up. This is Beatrice, and I don't even have your name in front of me. So Beatrice from Moms Rising and Director of Justice. Go ahead, oh, here's your name right here, right in the screen. Beatrice.
No worries.
Okay. All right, Beatrice. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I want to find out how, number one, how you became such an activist, because when I read your bio, it just goes on forever. So just give us a brief overview.
Hopefully a sign of a life of purpose, I hope. Yes, it's a pleasure to be here with you, Bob, and thank you so much for all the work that you do. Beatrice Beckford, I am a national director at Moms Rising, and in that capacity I serve as the national director of youth and family justice. In that role I support our over 1 million members representing all 50 states in mobilizing and taking action on issues that they care about, and that's everything from, you know, issues that impact family economic security to protecting our schools, health care, child care, you name it, the issues that are important to American families, American parents, we mobilize and organize together on. I come to this work largely as an educator. So, you know, for many years I taught in alternative schools within the public space. I also taught in youth incarceration facilities. And realized very early on in my career that if I really wanted to help young people, if I really wanted to create a climate and a culture where our young people were celebrated no matter where they came from or what they looked like or what their family's economic capacity was, that I needed to engage in organizing and policy. And I was supported in making that transition to policy advocacy work and to full-time advocacy work, with the support of many other educators, many other advocates, and organizations like Moms Rising, both national and local nonprofit organizations engaging in, you know, work that really is essential to actualizing our democracy.
Beatrice, this is John, and I'm doing the soundboard for Bob. Bob had something I'd take care of. Just keep talking about yourself and all the things that you are involved with. Explain a little bit about the term Moms Rising. Where did that come from, and how does it apply to the things that you do?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately at Moms Rising, we want to see families thrive. We want to see families of all walks of life thrive. Moms Rising's early work was really situated in work protecting parents, but also really work protecting pregnant people, people who were having children, who not only, you know, were trying to build their families, but were doing so under conditions that really didn't support, you know, families in being able to do so economically. We saw lots of workers who were pregnant discriminated against in the workplace, many parents and caregivers having to leave the workforce because of a lack of childcare infrastructure in this country, and meet real economic hardships, right? Something that we really shouldn't be seeing families do. We look at countries across the world and we see major investments to support families. And unfortunately, you know, we've really struggled to do this in this country, but there are models, And so a lot of our work at Moms Rising is situated in supporting parents, supporting families, and those who choose to grow their families, economically, be able to thrive, in all the ways that we know making investments in our communities and our schools and in our families, build robust communities that actualize our democracy.
Well, you have so much experience organizing and you've done so much. You're the co-founder and national organizer for National Black Food and Justice Alliance. You're, mm-hmm. You're the director of the Grassroots Action Network. You did that. Mm-hmm. You worked with grassroots coalition building support to communities mm-hmm. across the country to develop strategic partnerships to strengthen communities' power and self-determination. In other words, you've done a lot, transformative organizing, institution building, coalition building, and you're committed to lifting up the leadership of historically marginalized communities and to build power and capacity for grassroots groups to organize effectively, developing strategies rooted in the collective wisdom of grassroots communities. So mm-hmm. reading about you, I said, my goodness gracious. So what keeps you going, considering things seem to be getting worse? And, there's a virtual press conference today. I know that you're running that or you're part of it. Could you talk about that and what's that all about?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, ultimately what we're seeing right now is, and I, you know, you're right. I'll address your first question, which is what keeps me going in this? And as cliche as it sounds, it's hope, right? There is so much chaos, you know, permeating everything that we navigate each and every day in this country. And it's purposeful, right? The chaos throws us off track. It makes us feel disconnected. It sort of pushes against what we know to be the wisdom of the other, right? And what democracy is built to do is to bring people together, to create a plurality of voices that allow for a dynamic multiracial society to exist, what we know to be beloved societies. I truly believe that democracy is a practice. It's a muscle that we have to continue to work so that we build it. We actualize it in the ways that we dream it. And if we don't dream of multiracial democracy that has the sort of investments in the things that our communities need, then democracy starts to crumble. And I think that's ultimately what we see now, this culture of hate, this culture of chaos, this culture of isolation that wants people to feel alone, right? But what I'm privileged to sort of bear witness to and to be a part of as part of organizations like Moms Rising and to have the touch points that I'm privileged to have with grassroots groups across the country is that I see the sort of rich work, the sort of mutual aid work, the sort of connectivity and desire to show up for each other that parents, caregivers, educators, people from all walks of life, people who are directly impacted, people who are not directly impacted but care about their neighbors, that care about the teachers in their schools, that care about the children who are fearful of showing up to the school buildings because of ICE interventions. I see those acts of kindness and generosity each and every day. I see that when a parent reaches out to us because, there's a parent who was taken by ICE, and just yesterday alone, a father who's got the 1-year-old and the baby's not taking the formula, like that we can connect this parent to milk banks, that we can connect them to legal aid services that provide supports. And this is people take action immediately because they care. And because of that, that's what my hope is sort of situated on, that we see people pushing against what is a kleptocracy, people pushing against what is a clear desire to build fascism within this administration, sometimes calling it that, sometimes not calling it that, right? And to make us feel separate from each other. But I see acts of kindness and generosity and mutual aid each and every day that give me hope. And that allows me to believe that we are the majority, right? They are the minority. And if we just keep protecting, keep pushing against and slowing the progression of their efforts, then we will win. And I truly believe that we will win because we care about each other.
Well, I think you're 100% correct, is that we are the majority. It's mm-hmm. it's really dis discerning, disconcerting that being the majority, that a minority of people, and of course, when you're the president of the United States, you have a lot of power.
That's
and,
right.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, the first time that Trump was in office, I was thinking, well, I'm sure something good can come about. You know, one thing that I thought at the time was the U.S. imperialism in Iraq, Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, all the countries around the world went along with us. They went along with the United States because the United States has that reputation that they care about countries, they care about people.
Yeah.
And when Trump came in the office and some of the things he said, and it kind of I said to myself, I said, wow, now the rest of the world is going to know that the United States does not deserve the reputation and the esteem that they give us, you know, and I was thinking during his whole term, I said, this is good. This is good. Now we're back again to where we were before. And I think a lot of countries are now taking a stand and speaking up for themselves. And so in my mind, internationally, that was one of the good things about Trump being our president. But as far as what's going on now with ICE and immigrants being castigated and criticized, and we know this country would not function without the abilities and everything that the immigrants do for this country.
Yeah, I mean, so much. I mean, you know, even if we just look at Florida's economy, right, providing essential labor in key sectors like agriculture, construction, hospitality, they expand consumer markets, they pay taxes, they start businesses. I mean, the targeting of immigrants in the state of Florida alone mirrors what we see across the country, which is the projection of billions of losses economically. And so it's really disheartening to see, you know, state laws and federal laws crack down on immigrants without acknowledging the failures of our immigration system, right? It affects small businesses. It affects, you know, lost tax revenues, which make major contributions to the things that we want our tax dollars to be investing in. It's a reduction in consumer spending. It's a reduction in essential workforces. And like I said, it's billions and billions of dollars in economic loss. So the failure of this administration to recognize the contributions economically alone of immigrants is disheartening beyond measure. And, you know, this press conference that we're having, largely hosted by the Advancement Project, I'm blessed to be in community with that organization, working across a number of fronts. If we look at the way that immigrant students and parents are being treated within the school space, right, this is sort of part of a broader attack on our public education system. And, you know, I'm very clear as somebody who was an educator, who still sees myself as an educator, who has two school-age children attending public schools. I believe in our public school system, that all children, right, by law in this country, have a right to a public education. That doesn't matter where you came from, what you look like, how much money your family makes. They have a right. That is ingrained. And I believe wholeheartedly, because I believe in this country. I believe in the possibilities that are created here because of the people who come here to dream, right? And the people who build lives here, right? Who make contributions from science to, you know, health, to the arts and culture, that we have one of the richest and robust cultures because it's a culture that includes us all, right? And a culture that seeks to include cultures and perspectives and ideologies from all walks of life, right? And makes a space for that. And all of that sort of building, again, the sort of ways in which we seek to actualize democracy and build the beloved societies that we all deserve, that by creating a culture where immigrants are attacked in our schools, that our schools lose, right? Immigrants have made contributions, not just economically, but in our public education space. And in order to have a rich and robust multiracial society, you have to have a rich and robust education system. It doesn't just affect staffing within our school space. It affects enrollment. And we know a lot of school funding is connected to student enrollment and pupil counts. Immigrants make contributions that actually foster some of the most important things that keep our schools safe, like social cohesion, the sense of belonging, They enrich the learning environments in ways that are in many ways sometimes unmeasurable, right? They bring diverse perspectives. They build diverse networks. And we all get something when immigrants bring their culture into the school space. It builds a culture and a climate of tolerance that is essential for democracy to thrive. So what we're hoping to sort of discuss at this news conference is the importance of protecting immigrant students in the school space. We've heard so many disheartening stories. One in particular I heard a couple months ago of a little girl who actually was based in Texas, was an immigrant student, and who was being bullied because students were bullying her, saying that her parents were undocumented and that her parents were going to be taken. This little girl attempted to take her own life, and this is like a 9-10 year old. And so we're seeing the sort of emboldenedness of this administration, the sort of hate speech and culture that's being perpetuated by this administration play out in our school space as well, a place that should be protected because learning is a tender thing that is worthy of our protection. And so what we're hoping to lift up both with grassroots partners that are doing incredible work across the country and the Advancement Project and Moms Rising's robust immigration work is to have a conversation about how we can support immigrant students while also recognizing that the attacks on our public education system, the attacks on Medicaid and these essential services that Americans have a right to are happening to fund the terrorizing of immigrant students and families, to terrorize immigrants broadly. I mean, they don't care really whether you're documented or not. They don't care whether you've spent 20 years in this country working and contributing to the economy. They view all immigrants as criminals. And I think that we have to continue to be pushing against that while recognizing that, you know, we haven't done enough in this country to ensure that we have a safe and seamless process for people that want to seek citizenship in this country. And that has been the case for many, many years. During the Biden administration, there was a bipartisan effort to improve the immigration system. And Trump, despite not being, the president at the time, actively, solicited the GOP to vote against that, something that they helped to create as well. And so this is not about addressing immigration. This is not about immigration reform. This is about terrorizing people and, using money that should be used to invest in schools, to invest in our healthcare, and to invest in our community's infrastructure to terrorize good people.
Well, I want to let the listeners know that we're talking with Beatrice Beckford, who is with Moms Rising, and the fight that they're putting up against ICE and further ICE funding. You were mentioning many of the things that were, I had this article pulled up that was on a Moms Rising website that just came out 2 days ago. Tell Congress to reject further ICE funding and to restore congressional oversight. And so I want to mention that I'd like to have the listeners go to Moms Rising, MOMSRising.org, and it's chock full of information relating to what they do, what you can do, how you can take action, all the different campaigns that are taking place through Moms Rising. And there's videos on there and policy, politics and policies. And there's a podcast. It looks like that podcast happens, on a weekly basis on Moms Rising?
Yep, the podcast is on a weekly basis. We have robust social media channels where both our members share stories. We have an active story collection happening right now, both with respect to immigration issues, but also with respect to education. You know, these cuts are going to be devastating. We had a win, and we have to continue to push for these wins when the administration sought to freeze almost $6 billion in funds that were already approved for a public school. This is after school programs in rural West Virginia. You know, this is supports for, you know, nurses, counselors, social workers in places like Birmingham, Alabama. You know, these dollars for our schools, every dollar for our public schools is critical. And so we were able to push against, and that actually allowed us to sort of move several GOP elected officials to say, hey, we have concerns about this funding that was already approved being taken. And they unfroze those funds. But now, you know, through the appropriations process, they're trying to continue those cuts into the next budgeting process. And so hopefully we don't have, you know, a government shutdown. But I don't know if that's even, you know, possible to say, hey, maybe we do need something like that so that they don't continue to slash and burn and use our tax dollars to terrorize, you know. One thing I will say is that, you know, as parents and caregivers and, you know, as many of the Moms Rising members, you know, shout loud and proud across the nation, we are very clear that there should be no cruelty on taxpayer dimes. And what's even worse is that these harms are happening at the expense of healthcare, childcare, and schools. And we have to be clear about that. You know, people are mobilizing. I was so deeply in awe of the No Kings rallies happening across the country. I'm seeing and hearing that there's going to be lots of nationwide protests continuing the No Kings movement in October. And so I hope people, you know, get out and join your neighbors, join the other parents in your communities, bring your children, and let's make it clear that there are no kings in this country. We live in a democracy, and that means that the word of the people should be the highest word of all. And the people don't want this. You know, you hear even folks that thought, you know, that they wanted to stick with their party and vote Republican. There are people who, you know, voted in, who still identify as independents, who see that, you know, whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, that something is seriously wrong right now. And many, you know, folks that voted Republican are saying this is not what they voted for, right? They didn't vote for Medicaid to be slashed. They didn't vote for money to be taken from their public schools and sort of pushed into voucher schemes and these block grants that will continue to strip money from our public schools to pad the pockets of billionaires, right? And I say to those people too, come out. You know, say it loud and proud. Let your legislators know, right? If you're in a Republican district, if you're in a Democratic district, I don't care. Let them know that this is not right and that you're going to be taking action and that you're going to continue to be loud. You're going to continue to show up to the polls. And midterms are coming up, and we already see what they're doing in response to the midterms in places like Los Angeles and D.C. and now in Chicago. They're trying to do a power grab, but the people's might is stronger than that, and the people are intelligent, and, you know, folks got to show up, and as I like to say, show up and show out and make it so that your vote counts for the things that you deeply value. It's not about voting along your sort of longstanding party line. It's about voting for what your family needs and voting for what your community needs, and there's very few communities that I hear say, we don't need public schools. I mean, this is going to have devastating effects in Republican states, and it's also going to have devastating effects in rural communities that are so dependent on things that were stewarded by the Department of Education at the federal level, right? Protections for students living with disabilities, funding, IDEA, so many students that sort of are dependent, whose families require those essential supports for their students to be able to engage in the school space meaningfully. We're going to see a lot of that be fall to the wayside if this president is able to continue the onslaught and the attack against our essential services like our schools, our healthcare, you know, and the protections that are in place to ensure that every student has access to that. So we don't want to see that. We want to see people in the streets. We want to see people talking to their neighbors and community members. We want to see people showing up to the polls. And voting for what matters, which is investments in our communities, investments in our public schools, and not a vote for billionaires, not a vote for cutting and slashing these things that the American people deserve.
Well, I in the evening time, I watch quite a few YouTube videos, and you know, related to Ukraine, Israel, and you know, and then I read the YouTube comments because I think you get a good indication of what people are thinking.
I agree.
And how they're reacting to that particular video. And I've read so many of the comments centered around the fact that I voted for Trump because I thought he was going to be a peace president. That's why I voted for him. I am really disappointed.
It's shocking to me.
What's that?
It's shocking, but also, you know, it's shocking to me. I hear these. I totally agree. There's so much life in the comments, right, where you see people really say what they believe and their sort of perspectives on things in the current moment. And, you know, part of me wants to be frustrated with these people and say, well, no, he said all these things. We heard the rallies. We heard the rallying cries. We heard him, you know, say he was going to throw people into prisons. He said, we heard him say within the first 100 days that he was going to round up millions, right? Millions of immigrants. We heard him also say that he was going to go after criminal offenders, right? And, you know, if anybody that, you know, looks up can see that that's not what's happening here. And so as much as I want to be frustrated with these people, I also understand that there is so much misinformation, especially in the social media space, that is hard to weed through. It's hard to know what's real and what's not real. I mean, we could have a conversation just on AI alone, right? It's so hard to weed through. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, it's so important for us to sort of come out of the social media space as much as we can to connect with the people who are around us, right? To connect with our neighbors, to talk to people, you know, in our day-to-day lives, and understand and seek to understand, because that's not what the chaos and this sort of social media misinformation, the sort of widespread disinformation seeks to do. It seeks to make us feel like it's us against them, right? And I think there's so much wisdom in togetherness. There's so much wisdom. I know for me personally, as a, you know, somebody connected to an organization where we have parents and caregivers from across the country that come from all different walks of life. I've learned so much from parents in West Virginia about their communities and what they're doing each and every day on the ground to build better, right? I hear from parents and caregivers, and I get to see what people are doing in New York City, you know, that this socialist, this, the potential for a democratic socialist mayor and the sort of excitement around that, right? And I think we need more of that, right? I think we need more of this, just like you and I, right? Having this conversation, seeking to understand and to make sense of what's happening in the world around us as human beings who inherently are communal creatures that need connection, right? As opposed to seeking that behind a screen and having to weed through what's real and what's not real, because sometimes it's really hard to tell. So as much as I want to be frustrated with these folks, I also see a lot of these folks being loud too, saying this is not what they voted for. I even, you know, went with my my partner the other day. We were looking at houses, you know, thinking about buying something, and our realtor is somebody that wrote it, has been a long time Republican, and he was, you know, sharing with us how that he didn't vote for this, that he didn't vote for fascism, and that was his words, not mine. You know, I'm definitely that people, you know, no matter.